Ready. Is David back? Don't know if David's back yet. Oh, I guess he is. All right, then let's get started. Our third and final oral argument this morning is the State of Minnesota versus Robert Meffert. As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief, the respondent will have 15 minutes, and finally the appellant will have 5 minutes of rebuttal. Whenever counsel for the appellant is ready, just unmute your microphone and tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
May it please the court. I'm Stephen Groshen, and I'm here representing the appellant, Robert Meffert. Appellant is requesting that the Court of Appeals reverse the district court order, and to clarify the last line in my principal brief, that would require a remand back to district court for the district court to determine whether there was reasonable articulable suspicion. The primary and really the sole issue in this matter is whether the appellant was seized when the police officer grabbed his license in a gas station parking lot. The primary case is State v. Cripps. State v. Cripps was a case that involved—
I guess I'll sort of jump in right there. I'm not sure I would agree with those facts as he recited them. Would it be fair to say that what he did do was ask your client, do you have ID? Then your client gave him his driver's license. And then at that point, the officer took the license back to his squad car and ran a check. Would that be a fair assessment of the facts?
I think that's an accurate description. In State v. Cripps, if you search to that opinion, they never use the word demand in that opinion anywhere. They actually use the term asked. So I don't think that distinguishes it from State v. Cripps. He asked for the license. Depending on the tonality, the appellant gave him the license. And that, at that point, that's the seizure.
I could have just said, yeah, I do. Right? And maybe he could have also said, but I'm not going to give it to you. And then this would be a different case, but I guess I have a problem viewing under those facts, this being a seizure when it's your client who was voluntarily giving his license, which the officer didn't ask for. He said, do you have ID? And you can say, yes, I do, or no, I don't. And you know, off you go.
So Your Honor, it goes back to that impossible choice as they describe it in State v. Cripps, where we have someone who, based on their status, meaning their age, they're doing something illegal. They're drinking in a bar illegally. And based on appellant's status, he does not have a valid license. So when an officer comes up to his vehicle, knocks on his window, shines a light in, and asks for his license, and he hands it over, he doesn't really have another option. He's in the difficult situation where if he said no, obviously the situation would escalate, similar to how it would in State v. Cripps. The case that analyzes State v. Cripps—
Can I just ask you, Mr. Groshen, before we move on, do you think there is a qualitative difference between an officer asking an individual who is in the driver's seat of a car for identification versus someone who is— to take it out of the Cripps factual scenario a little bit, someone who is standing on the street, do you see a difference there?
I do. And as I said in the brief, you need a valid license to drive in Minnesota. Standing on side of the street, there isn't something by the nature of that act that could be criminal if you didn't have a valid license. The other thing that's on top of that is, so we asked for the identification, but that's not the end of it. The officer goes back to the squad car to run the license through the computer. And there's no new information or something that changes within this time that would suggest that the reasonable person would not feel they were seized or that they were free to leave.
Right, but Mr. Groshen, I think the key distinction here is not what occurred after he handed over his driver's license, but what the inquiry was. And as has already been pointed out, the inquiry was, do you have a driver's license? The question wasn't, can you please give me, or there wasn't a request asking for it. So I don't think it was an impossible, I don't think he was caught between a rock and a hard place. He could have simply said, yes, I have it, but I'm not going to give it to you, or no, I don't have one. And if and when, as Judge Connolly pointed out, the police officer actually asked him to hand it over, that's a different scenario. What we only have here is a simple request to have one. And so I don't think that was an impossible quandary that appellant was in. He simply could have said, he could have said, yes, I have one. And if the officer requested it, he could have declined or said, no, I don't. And, you know, may I leave now? So, I'm not sure that what happened subsequent is as important as the discussion of at that point.
Sure, Your Honor. So at the time, again, I think respondent and appellant disagree a little bit about what's the primary focus of the EDJ test, which throughout that opinion, they do reference shows of authority, but the phrase that's constantly used is whether the reasonable person would feel free to leave. And the idea that there needs to be some extreme show of authority is kind of the modifier I would put on it is not accurate under the law, because there's not a very strong show of authority in Cripps, meaning they're not pulling a gun on her. They're simply coming into the bar. They're asking for the license. And that was enough as a show of authority. And the Supreme Court is really analyzing it from the objective perspective of someone in Cripps' shoes. So, Judge, do you have a question? Oh, sorry. I'll continue. And so within appellant's shoes, even if an officer is coming up and asking, can I have your license? That phrase is enough that a reasonable person within his shoes would not feel free to disregard that.
But I think that's the key difference there. Did the officer ask him, can I have your license?
No, I believe he asked, do you have a license?
Correct. And I think that's the key distinction that we have here. He was simply asking, do you have a license?
I don't know how a reasonable person would interpret that in the scenario where they're sitting in a parking lot and an officer comes up and talks to them, other than the officer is asking for them to provide identification. I mean, I understand that the difference between the exact phrasing of the whether he wants a request or to ask, and I know there's a bit of a dispute on whether he asked at all from the court's questions, but the phrasing of the question given the context of where he was, I don't believe the reasonable person would feel free to disregard that.
And to that point, you mentioned the show of authority. And when I look at the record here, and you look at, as you mentioned, looking at all the circumstances, it doesn't appear that there's any show of authority. He wasn't speaking in a loud voice. He didn't brandish his gun. There's only one officer there. All the circumstances that we're looking at, he was on the passenger side. He didn't have his lights on. He wasn't blocking his exit with his car at that time. All of those indications are that he would have been free to leave at any time. And along with that, there wasn't any show of authority. So why would he have been detained at that point if there isn't any indication of any show of authority?
Sure. So I disagree that there wasn't a show of authority. So the factors you're describing are all factors under the case law. I agree with that. Those are listed. Those are examples of shows of authority. But the test isn't whether there are specific things done. It's a totality of the circumstances test. So the show of authority can be enough if it's an armed officer in uniform showing up to someone who's sitting in the vehicle. Because again, in Cripps, yes, they were asking other people in the bar, but I think that goes more to the reasonable articulable suspicion standard, that there wasn't individualized suspicion. I read Cripps as the seizure. It was enough that the two officers came up. Admittedly, there's one here. Two officers came up to Cripps in the bar while she was having a drink. And that in itself was enough of a show of authority. I understand the court may be questioning the distinction between asking if you have a license, asking to see your license, and do you have ID? That is admittedly one difference. I don't have the exact phrasing from Cripps on what the officer asked, just the Supreme Court's summary of it, which is that the officer asked for identification. But given that the officer was in a uniform, showed up in a squad car, even though the officer didn't walk him in, didn't tell him he was under arrest, these facts, in the totality of the circumstances, are enough such that someone would not feel free to leave.
Mr. Groshen, what about the act of actually taking the license back to his car? Could you focus on that? I mean, even if the request for a license wasn't a seizure, it seems like maybe your better argument would be what occurred once the officer took that license constitutionally.
That's correct. And so I understand most questions have been focused on the ask, but again, the subsequent actions to when he takes the license, I think, do matter because the seizure is at the time. So at any given point, someone can be seized throughout the interaction. Obviously, at the beginning of the interaction, as there's less shows of authority and things increase, and the officer has his license, at that point, yes, I believe it would be a triggered seizure because assuming he had a valid license, just for the sake of answering this question, he would not feel free to leave. He would need his license in order to leave the parking lot. Now, admittedly, his exhaust is broken, so he's not leaving the parking lot, but the idea is still whether he could leave or travel somewhere else. And I believe there is case law on the idea that identification is an important part of just being an average citizen. You need it to buy cigarettes, you need it to buy beer, you need it for different aspects of your daily life, such that if someone's identification is taken from them, they would not feel free to continue about their day without that. The last thing I want to touch on is Harris. So State v. Harris is the case that I found that analyzed State v. Cripps in the most detail. So the most in detail Supreme Court case. And that one found that it wasn't a seizure through a narcotics stop on a bus. But really the two distinctions that I think are important in Harris that it points out in Cripps is in the appellant here was not informed that he was free to leave. That happened in Harris. That did not happen in Cripps. And then the second distinction between Harris and Cripps is in Harris, that defendant was not in a status position, as I describe it, meaning a position where they, by the nature of their status, they were doing something illegal, which in appellant's case would be operating a motor vehicle or inside a motor vehicle with an invalid license. Because we have that here and it wasn't in Harris, I don't think Harris distinguishes the conclusion the court should draw from Cripps. And if the court has no further questions, that's...
I do have a question before we let you go, Mr. Groshen. So assuming we agree with you that there was actually a seizure in this case, it sounds like you're asking for a remand to the district court to determine whether there was RAS, reasonable articulable suspicion. Does this court have authority to address that question on its own at this juncture without a remand?
Sure. So the case was a little nuanced on that, but the straight answer would be yes, you do have authority because it was argued. It was briefed in district court. The district court did not address it, did not analyze it. So generally there's a preference if the district court doesn't analyze something to give the district court an opportunity to address that because the district court judge sat through the hearing, heard the testimony. And if we're going to have some factual distinctions with based on what respondent argues about bloodshot eyes, things that were not addressed in the district court's order, I think it makes more sense for the district court to analyze that first. But from my reading of case law, if something is briefed, it is within the court of appeals discretion to address it. If the even if the district court didn't rule on it, and it was briefed. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now hear for counsel for the respondent, please.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Travis Smith. I represent respondent State of Minnesota in this appeal. This case is resolved by two words, bloodshot eyes. The officer had, at the very least, reasonable, articulable suspicion of criminal activity the moment he saw that appellant's eyes were really, really red and bloodshot. And that's an exact quote from the squad video. This is an objective indication of impairment, and under this court's well-settled jurisprudence, an officer's observation of just one indicum of intoxication is sufficient to justify any alleged seizure in this case.
Well, Mr. Smith, can I stop you on that? Because when I know you're citing case law that talks about you only need one objective indication of intoxication, but I just want to clarify, if you actually look at that case law and you look at the seminal cases on which they rely, those cases do not stand for the proposition that you only need one indication. The original cases that came out on that talked about how originally you needed to meet all five criteria that had been laid out by the court. Then there's a case that came out, and my apologies because I don't have the names of them off the top of my head, but one of the seminal cases said, no, you don't need to have all five. And then the telephone game began, and the court said, oh, you only need a few, and then it ended up being you only need one. But that is not what the original case said. The original case talked about how you don't need all five of the original indicia of intoxication. So is there something more than just the bloodshot eyes?
Certainly, there's more than just the bloodshot eyes. And I do want to address this concern about how the case law is developed. And as I read this court's case law, I think to adopt the appellant's reasoning about the one in indicator of impairment, this court will have to actually walk back or specifically overrule its decisions in Keir and Carver. So I think the way the case law has developed, it maybe started out at one place, but this court's published decisions clearly articulate a rule at this time that only one indicator of impairment is sufficient to establish probable cause. And I think that's an important distinction here, is that justifies probable cause, which justifies an arrest. Here we only have to have reasonable articulable suspicion, which is a lower quantum of evidence essentially that's required. And so I don't think we even need to wade into that thorny thicket of how the case law is developed, because what we're talking about is RAS as opposed to probable cause.
I understand, Mr. Smith. I just wanted to caution you that those are decisions from the Court of Appeals. None of those are decisions from the Minnesota Supreme Court. We do have the authority to overrule or clarify decisions that we have made. And I just want to make you aware that I am aware of the genealogy of those cases and what the original cases actually stood for compared to the subsequent ones, which seem to have misinterpreted them.
That's certainly a reasonable argument that there's been a misinterpretation. And I understand this court has the authority to overrule its prior decisions. I just wanted to make it clear to the court that's, I believe, based on my reading of the case law, that's what would be required to adopt appellant's position here. And
I'd like to shift and follow up on a question Judge Gaitis asked to Mr. Groshen. So do you believe when the officer took his license back to his squad car to check it, there was a seizure?
I believe it's at least reasonable to argue that constituted a seizure.
Does the record indicate how long this, checking of the license took?
The record does. I didn't time out in the squad video how long
assume it was like less than an hour.
Oh, it was way less than the hour. And the entire squad video, I think, is less than a half an hour long. So we're talking about a
matter. So are you arguing then that even if there was, I don't know, we always get to these fine points about how long it was and sort of the, so you're arguing that even if there was a seizure, it was momentary and fleeting and therefore no harm, no foul?
So my argument would be a couple of things. One, even if there was a seizure, at the time the officer took it back, it was justified by reasonable articulable suspicion, that it was reasonable in scope and duration based on the officer's observations at the time. The officer, by the time he took the license back to the squad car, had already not only observed but commented on the bloodshot, watery eyes. He had his other observations that he made earlier which I didn't get around to in answering Judge Reyes's question, but this, the appellant here was parked near the gas station. The officer testified this was an area of the gas station where cars don't usually park. It was midnight. He had a hood pulled up over his head. It was late September, so I don't know that it was particularly cold. The officer also said the defendant, the appellant, didn't appear to be sleeping since he was holding his head up instead of letting it tilt back and rest against the seat. And the appellant didn't move from the position for 10 to 15 minutes. The officer observed all of those things before he even made contact with the appellant. And then during the course of his contact with the appellant, he observed the bloodshot, watery eyes, which he commented on. Based on all of those things, the officer was certainly entitled to investigate further. All he needed was reasonable, articulable suspicion. We've got at least six independent facts that the officer could point to justify the any intrusion by running a license check under these circumstances.
What about, Mr. Smith, the question that I asked of your opposing counsel about this court's authority to consider the question of reasonable, articulable suspicion, given that the district court didn't really consider it explicitly? I think maybe implicitly, because I noted that in the court's order, the court said something about a valid basis, but certainly there was no explicit consideration of whether there was reasonable or articulable suspicion. Is it appropriate for us at this point to consider that issue based on the record that we have?
It is, and I would point to three reasons for that. First, I do believe that even though it's fleeting, as you pointed out, Judge Gaitis, the district court made an implicit finding that there was a basis for any intrusion that would have occurred when it said there was a valid basis. Second, there are sufficient facts in the record. The matter was argued and addressed by the parties in the lower court. And this is a this comes to this court after a stipulated facts trial. And the question that was stipulated to as being dispositive is whether the appellant was unconstitutionally seized. That's in the stipulation that's in the district court file. In order for the appellant to prevail on that issue, he has to establish both prongs of the test. First, that there was a seizure, and second, that it was unconstitutional. And this court does not presume error on appeal. And third, the state advances the fact that there was reasonable articulable suspicion as an alternative grounds for affirmance of the district court's decision under the Supreme Court's jurisprudence from State v. Grunig and reaffirmed, I think, in State v. Phelps. When the state advances an alternative grounds for affirmance, an appellate court has the authority to decide those matters, to affirm the decision when, one, the facts are sufficient in the record for the appellate court to consider the alternative theories, and there are here. There are no disputed, there's not a factual dispute. There's only the officer's testimony and the video. The appellant didn't object to the squad video being received. He certainly had the opportunity to do that, or the opportunity to provide, to conduct additional cross-examination.
So let's, if you don't mind, let's go back and talk a little bit about the factual circumstances that you believe established reasonable and articulable suspicion. Are you conceding that absent the bloodshot eyes, there was no RAS, or do you think that fact is inconsequential, that there already was reasonable and articulable suspicion before the officer even observed the bloodshot eyes?
I would not concede that the observation of the bloodshot, watery eyes is necessary. I think based on the record here, the totality of the circumstances, the officer had reasonable articulable suspicion of some criminal activity to at least justify his inquiry into identification. And it really, the bloodshot, watery eyes, as far as I'm concerned, puts us over the top and makes the analysis of the earlier question, the earlier factors, fairly inconsequential, would be my position, is that certainly the bloodshot, watery eyes is enough without anything else. But I think when you take them all together, we're more than that. reasonable articulable suspicion.
And I realize that your argument in your brief and below is that there was no seizure. But I'm wondering if, assuming there was a seizure, you could address when that might have occurred. Was it the request for a driver's license that has already been discussed, or was it the taking of the driver's license?
So I thank you for that question, because I want to clarify, the record is clear. You can listen to the squad video if you haven't. The officer asked, do you have ID? He didn't even ask, do you have a driver's license? He asked, do you have ID? And I don't believe that question, as the officer asked it, under the totality of the circumstances, constituted a seizure. I think if the court concludes that it did under these circumstances, it's adopting a bright line rule that any officer request for any officer question about an ID is a seizure. And I don't think that that's consistent with the case law. I think at the earliest—
Regardless of the context.
Regardless of the context. I think that's, as I listen to and read appellant's argument, what he's essentially advocating for is a bright line rule. If an officer asks any question about an ID, a seizure has happened, because any person's gonna reasonably think that you have to fork over the ID the moment the officer asks about it. I also wanna point out that appellant's comparison to Cripps and so-called status offenses doesn't quite line up the way he would like it to here, because appellant here was sitting in a non-running motor vehicle in a parking lot. He was not driving or operating the motor vehicle. Under 171.24, the statute that he's charged with violating, you have to operate the motor vehicle. Now, after the request for ID and the officer finds out about his status, he admits to earlier driving it. But at the time, sitting there in the vehicle, his status wasn't illegal. What he was doing sitting in behind the driver's seat was at best physical control. But this statute, unlike the DWI statute, doesn't make physical control of the motor vehicle a criminal act when your license is canceled. So that's an important distinction here from Cripps. The officer here wasn't asking this defendant to prove that he wasn't committing a crime. He was asking him if he had ID so he could ID him, presumably. He asked him if he had ID, and the appellant just handed it over. I think the earliest a seizure occurs here, arguably, is when the officer takes the license back with him and runs the license check. And I guess at this point in time, I would also point out that the district court found, as a matter of fact, that there was no show of force here. He found that this was a voluntary encounter. That's a question of fact, and it's not clearly erroneous on this record. And accordingly, this court should defer to the district court's conclusion about that fact. And unless the court has any other questions, I would simply ask this court to affirm appellant's convictions.
I'm sorry to jump in over you, Judge Connolly. I do have one question about that show of authority. Is that just a red herring? I mean, isn't the inquiry whether reasonable person would have felt free to leave regardless of whether there was an explicit show of force on the part of the officer?
No, I don't think it's a red herring. I think the case law requires some action on the part of the officer that takes the encounter beyond the normal voluntary encounter one would expect. The case law clearly requires either a physical seizure or some show of force. What our case law doesn't require, and this is where EDJ departs from the federal standard, is acquiescence to the show of force. There has to be a show of force. The officer has to do something that changes the nature of the encounter. So no, that's not a red herring. It's an important part of the analysis, and it's a two-part test. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Groshen, you'll have the last word.
I'm giving him a minute to set up the time here. All right, thank you. The first thing I want to address is what I'm asking for. I'm not asking for a bright line rule. That's not appellant's request here. We're looking at the totality of the circumstances. The seizure cases are decided based on whether the reasonable person would feel free to leave. And so it's based on these particular facts. We are not, the appellant is not asking for a bright line rule that anytime an officer asks for an ID in any circumstances, that would constitute a seizure. That is not appellant's position. That would not be true under the case law, because the court would need to analyze all of the circumstances. And again, the circumstances here involve the officer coming up to someone in a parked car. It's not a seizure at that point, and that's not appellant's position. It's not a seizure until the officer asks, do you have identification? And then again, how the court wants to look at if there's other points in the seizure or other points during what the timeline where there is a seizure. Absolutely, there is a stronger argument that the seizure, if not earlier, occurred when the officer took the license back to the squad. And as far as timeline and how facts are changing, I cited a case in my brief about how an officer can't disregard known facts, meaning if the suspicions are dispelled throughout the interaction, the officer cannot ignore that. So could the officer come up to appellant initially in his parked car, knock on the window and talk to him? Yes, that's not a seizure. He can ask him questions. And through those questions, there's nothing that came out, at least based on my reading of the record. But again, the district court didn't actually rule on whether there was reasonable articulable suspicion. And I would argue that the district court didn't do that implicitly either. The district court knows how to rule on the alternative. And if it wanted to, it could have found two ways for appellant to lose in district court. And essentially cut off this issue. But the district court didn't rule on reasonable articulable suspicion. So there wasn't reasonable articulable suspicion that the appellant was staking out the gas station at the point when the officer went back and ran the license. With respect to the bloodshot eyes, even if it were true that their bloodshot eyes and he was operating on that basis, that would not be enough. A single factor is not enough under the case law. And even if the court interprets a single factor as being enough under its own law, the cases are always on the totality of the circumstances. Again, reasonable articulable suspicion is not an automatic bright line test usually either. It's full analysis of all the circumstances. And here, just having bloodshot eyes at the time of night after the officer had shined the light into the vehicle would not be enough that the appellant had driven while impaired. And if the court has no further questions, I will rest.
Thank you, Mr. Groshen. Thank you, Mr. Smith. We appreciate the quality of your arguments. We will render our decision within 90 days. Thank you. And with that, our last oral argument,